For years, I've dropped the quote in various sermons and talks, if there were world enough and time enough. And I want to read the whole poem by Marvel to you today before I get into the topic of today's sermon. It is not R-rated or X-rated, but even for a Unitarian church, perhaps PG-rated. It is called To His Coy Mistress. Had we but world enough and time, this coyness lady were no crime. We would sit down and think which way to walk and to pass our long love's day. Thou by the Indian Ganges side shouldst rubies find. I by the tide of Humber would complain. I would love you 10 years before the flood, and you should, if you please, refuse till the conversion of the Jews. My vegetable love should grow vaster than empires and more slow. Thine eyes and on thy forehead gaze 200 to adore each breast, but 30,000 to the rest. An age at least to every part, and the last age should show your heart. For, lady, you deserve this state. Nor would I love at a lower rate, but at my back I hear time's winged chariot hurrying near. In yonder all before us lie deserts of vast eternity. Thy beauty shall no more be found, nor in thy marble vault shall sound my echoing song. Then worms shall try that long-preserved virginity, and your quaint honor turn to dust, and into ashes all my lust. The grave's a fine and private place, but none, I think, do there embrace. Now, therefore, while the youthful hue sits on thy skin like morning dew, and while thy willing soul transpires at every pore with instant fires, now let us sport us while we may, and now like amorous birds of prey rather at once our time devour than languish in his slow-chapped power. Let us roll all our strength in all our sweetness up into one ball and tear our pleasure with rough strife through the iron gates of life. Thus, though we cannot make our sun stand still, yet we will make him run. Well, today's theme is mortality. They say that when somebody gives a kind of involuntary shudder, we often say, well, somebody must have been walking on my grave. Well, I was giving an involuntary shudder early this summer because I was looking at my grave. I was looking at the place where, all things being equal, I plan to spend eternity, at least until the sun, nova, and the earth disappear. As a commitment to eternal togetherness, my wife and I went shopping for the final real estate you'll ever need. And it was very interesting. I mean, it was a lot of fun. And it really was. And that's the whole subject of mortality, because in a sense, it always raises the question, how do we deal with our finitude, with the finality of our lives, with the finality of the lives of others? Some people have afterlife. Some people have afterlives and paradise. In some systems, if you're really good, you don't get anything. And some people deal with it in tears and in trembling. Some people deal with it with humor. It will surprise no one that my defense is the jujitsu of humor. To take those anxiety-producing things and to take their energy and spin them back. So the shudder that I was suppressing was one of laughter. I found the whole experience to be remarkably funny. First of all, there was our grave guru, or our sepulcher stout, or our mausoleum maven, whatever you want to call him. I called him, just as an homage to Dickens, let's call him Mort. Anyway, Mort is selling us this land, and all of the metaphors are real estate, estate, and investment. I really like that. It was just like being pitched timeshare. You could get travel miles if you paid it off on your credit card, although where we were exactly going was maybe should have been more concerned about the ultimate repose of the soul than of the body, but I don't know. It was just, it was wonderful because the subtlety of it all. Well, this is a nice affordable section, and this is more upscale. So I don't know whether life is eternal, but obviously status is. Yeah. Neuroses and guilt survive post-mortem. Yeah. Johnny Carson's, my favorite Johnny Carson line was that, after death your hair and fingernails continue to grow, but the phone calls taper off really fast. But I'll be getting back to that, because as he was pitching all of this real estate with the points, with the travel mileage, and all of the business about the vaults, and there are three different kinds of vaults, and all of the wonderful choices. My favorite part was the part about its location, location, location. And so we're having this conversation with, well, honey, where do you want to be? I'd like to be playing with the grandchildren, but okay. Where would you want to be? Well, I want to be over there near a tree, near a walk and a fountain. I said, fine with me. And another couple we were with who were scouting real estate at the same time were saying, well, I don't want to be... Who are the neighbors going to be? Are you afraid they're going to be noisy? I mean, honestly, I'm not lying. I want to make sure that we have good neighbors and not people are going to leave too many decorations and are going to do this and do that. And I'm thinking, we human beings are wonderful. I mean, our neuroses are so sometimes charming and terrific. Now, one of the things that really got me was this being a new cemetery. Oh, I'm sorry, they're no longer cemeteries. Cemetery seems to have some unfortunate connection with death, and people find that morbid. So apparently, they are now called memorial parks. So I guess they just park you there and try to remember. What I really enjoyed was a couple of things. One of them is that you had a choice of a single grave or a double deep. You could save, and then of course the conversation is who's on top and who's on bottom, which you would think would be just a matter of chance, as everything in life is, a question of fate. But no, if somebody really stipulates that they want to be on top and they should predecease the other person, they can lift it up and change places and do a kind of après-mort, do-si-do, and which doesn't cost any more dough, incidentally. I just thought that was wonderful. So Mort is very comfortable talking about mortality and dealing with the morbid humor that people use in dealing with all this stuff, and I was, of course, a hard case for him. But he was very comfortable with this stuff. What he wasn't comfortable with was the question of resale. What happens if, what happens if there's a divorce and you've bought a double deep? What happens if there's a death and you bought a double deep and then a remarriage? Even in Southern California, they have not gone for the triple yet. And Mort was not at all happy that I raised the question. And I can't believe that I was the first one, but apparently I was. It was just terrific. And then they started talking about The View. And this is a beautiful view property up on the little hill with a view. Well, on the single deep, if you're 6 feet down in a wooden box in a cement vault, how are we getting this view? I mean, and I'm thinking that it's more likely if you're only 6 feet than 12 feet, so I've already bought into the irrationality of the entire experience. And I'm thinking, they got cable? You get Wi-Fi? I mean, where is this view? Where is this view coming from? We ended up buying in Simi Valley, not far from the Reagan Library and Mausoleum, which has done wonders for the property value. I mean, part of the whole pitch was, you better buy now because in a couple of months this is going to be sky high. I didn't know whether that was a theological statement or a real estate statement. But apparently everything now has changed in the Simi Valley. Before, nobody would go there, and now people are dying to get in. So we bought just in time. So that's kind of that's how I began my summer vacation. Then, as I indicated, my brother-in-law passed away. On my last Sunday here, I mentioned that he was ill, and they were not sure if he was going to have very much time or get out of the hospital, and he didn't. He went from healthy to dead in 3 weeks' time. And it was a pancreatic cancer that had not been discovered. And fortunately, it was not agonal and lengthy. More time in being in pain would not have been a favor to him. Prolonging death as opposed to prolonging life are separate issues. But as I sat down to write a condolence letter to my sister, Jane, I was again struck by the inadequacy of words to express our deepest and most real feelings, but I used a phrase that stopped me cold. I wrote in the first draft, "It goes without saying that I send you my love and my concern." And I stopped and I looked at that line, "It goes without saying," and it struck me as completely wrong-headed. It shouldn't go without saying. We shouldn't go and live and love each other without saying. The words are inadequate. It's true. But sometimes we have to stammer our miracles. Sometimes we have to realize that even though we assume that the other person knows, it's good to hear. It's good to hear when somebody has done something well. It's good to hear when somebody has touched a heart, has offered some kind of solace, a consolation, has been a pleasure and an inspiration within our lives. So much in that particular relationship for me went without saying, and I felt terrible because given what I do for a living, I of all people should know better. I did not see him as often as my affection and respect for him warranted, partially because he was so easy to be with. He was so a part of the landscape. There never was a sense of time or awkwardness in between that reflected the pauses in the relationship, that it always seemed that there would be time to get together. There would be time to enjoy and share other evenings together, to talk about the kids together, to talk and argue about politics together. We didn't have precisely the same position. Fortunately, my sister represented my position pretty well. But he was fun to talk to. And I so regretted the time not spent and the words that went without being said. And it was a reminder to me that we all really need to remember how precious and how fragile and how uncertain and how unearned and how tenuous and vulnerable this magical moment when we live is. As if I needed more reminding, as I was driving to church today, my phone rings. I'm expecting it to be my wife. And I said, "Hi, honey." And my son said, "Well, hi." And he said, "I've got something really important." I spent a wonderful weekend up in Northern California with my son, my daughter-in-law, and my granddaughter. And my son said that my daughter-in-law's best friend was in a terrible automobile accident in which her six-year-old was killed. And they had questions for me because she was about to get on a plane and fly back to Virginia about the mourning traditions in conservative Judaism and how long to stay and what to say and how to deal with all of the various issues. And again, it was a reminder of just how fragile and tenuous the miracle is. Nothing should go without saying, because it, life, and time are not on this plane infinite and cannot be counted on. We need to take the time, even understanding that if all we can say is words cannot express being here with and for each other, is what we do. We witness and live our lives and our loves and our values. I told Suyun that no, there was nothing that she could say to her friend that would take the pain away, and nothing that should take the pain away. There was nothing that she could say that would be of real comfort in the sense that we want to solve each other's problems, but what she could do is simply be there as a presence, keeping her company and letting her know that she's not alone. And that is the great gift that we have to give to each other in the one-on-one relationships in our lives and in the communal relationships of our lives, that we don't go through it alone. We voyage with each other. We don't ultimately solve the deep problems of meaning, of existence. We don't give the philosophical answers to each other, but we can be for each other good and consoling company when we wrap our arms and our actions and our hearts and our words around each other. Words that don't simply fill a void, but express as best we can and as inadequately as they are the truths of our hearts, that we care and that we are together. That's why we come together. That's why family is important. Friendships are important. Communities are important. Because together we take comfort through those passages of our lives that seem impossible. Those words, in the absence of certainty that there will be cable in the future underground, need to be said while we're on this side of the sod. So if I need a reminder, we all need a reminder. So sometime after services, go up and hug three people.